Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind.
Sidebar with Cindy
on Kaya FM 95.9.
FM 95.9, home of the Afropolitan. The time is 7 o'clock and welcome to Sidebar Cindy with me, Dr. Cindy Seyfan-Sale. And this evening, we're speaking about a serious condition, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Medical issues, sex and family,
finance, parenting and emotional development.
Sidebar with Cindy. Sidebar with Cindy. Every Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Kaya FM 95.9, home of the Afropolitan. Untate John will be back on Monday evening with another great show. But tonight on Sidebar with Cindy, we're speaking about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. If you've missed any of the podcasts from my show, you can catch them at kayafm.co.za. Click on FM Rewind and then click on Sidebar with Cindy and you can catch up there. If you're not in Gauteng, you can listen to us online at kayafm.co.za. You can also listen to us on DSTV's audio bouquet on channel 861. Tonight's show is about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And what it is that when something traumatic has happened to someone, after a period of time, that person might start suffering what we recognize as PTSD, post-trauma stress disorder, where you are unable to you know, anything related to the situation, the traumatic situation you went through, makes you anxious, makes you nervous. It could have been a car accident, and after the incident, you're unable to drive. You're afraid of cars. You're afraid of driving down that road where the accident happened. And the important thing is that every person's journey and struggle with PTSD is unique, and it's important to get help. I think what we're going to try and highlight throughout the show is the symptoms of PTSD so that you can recognize if you're going through it and get the help that you need, because it can be quite debilitating, and you need to know what the symptoms are so that you can get the help that you need. We'll be taking your calls on 086-000-959. The hashtag on social media is Sidebar Cindy, and the other hashtag is KFM Talk. And I'll be joined by Faith Mnyameni, who is a social worker, private social worker from Imani Psychosocial Solutions. But before we take your calls, let's take a listen to this clip.
Lindo Kuhlenkosi is a writer currently based in Johannesburg. In 2017, she lived Ekhini in the Eastern Cape as a student and experienced a series of violent attacks during several break-ins into her home. In each of these incidents, the assailants were armed, and on some occasions, she found herself physically fighting to save her life. That period, she says, resulted in her suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, which in fact compounded another condition she had called general anxiety disorder, which she'd been diagnosed of a few years before. And so, when in 2018, exactly a year after the first break-in, she got a serious panic attack, she realized that it was time to seek for help.
So I first went to a psychologist who said, I'm not ready for cognitive behavior therapy. She was like, you're too wired. You're too scared. You need to learn how to soften again. You need to learn how to be here again. Anything that I say to you is going to go back into that place of fear. So you need drugs at least for 3 months. Then you'll come back and we'll start CBT. But there's no way I'd be taking your money and wasting your money. But I was just like, that was your shanya. I remember I was sitting in the parking lot. I called my mom. I was like, no, mama, it's your shanya. Like, I need drugs. It's your shanya. And I guess it was defensiveness, but I'm like, it should feel difficult. I'm going through a difficult time. It should feel difficult. I should cry. Why is she making me feel wrong for crying? Why is she telling me I need to be on drugs? So it felt like a judgment of my pain, like I'm not supposed to be expressing this way.
Sidebar with Cindy.
On Kaya FM 95.9.
Kaya FM 95.9, home of the Afropolitan. And that clip that you just listened to was, Ulindo Kuhlenkosi explaining what happened to her, the trauma that she experienced, and then the post-traumatic stress disorder that manifested around a year later. And you can listen to that clip and other clips on In Therapy or from the Kaya FM website that's hosted by Unle Bagazi, kayafm.co.za, and click on podcasts and listen to the full episode. So as I said, PTSD is a serious condition. And we know that in our country, that a lot of people have suffered, levels of violence and other, traumatic situations. But PTSD is something that we need to speak about. That if you've suffered something and later on you have symptoms that you can't recognize, hopefully after tonight's show, you'll be able to understand what you're going through and get the help that you need. So online, I'm joined by Faith Mnyameni, a private social worker from Imani Psychosocial Solutions. Good evening, Faith, and welcome to Sidebar with Cindy.
Good evening, Dr. Cindy. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and good evening to your listeners as well.
It's always great to have you on the show, and I look forward to all the insights that you'll be bringing to the show. I think the first thing that we need to do, Faith, is to define what post-traumatic stress disorder is.
Sure. I mean, obviously, just to also break it down even further, first we need to understand exactly also what is trauma itself. You know, often people experience trauma obviously after being exposed to an overwhelming situation where emotions are actually overwhelmed. And what post-traumatic stress disorder basically is that delayed reaction to those kind of traumatic symptoms. And we talk about physical symptoms and physical and emotional symptoms, which you might address a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's the delayed reaction, you know, to the traumatic incidents, it means that often you'd find that a person would react to a traumatic incident a few weeks after the incident. Sometimes you find somebody who's been raped or a child passed away or a family member passed away, but they only start reacting, you know, some time later, to a point where it's uncontrollable, it's overwhelming, and it often then starts to interfere with the daily life, such that physical symptoms, I mean, I've heard the clip as well, where the physical symptoms such as panic attacks started happening to one of the listeners. Yeah.
And Faith, I think the important thing is for people to understand that when you've gone through something traumatic, we don't all respond in the same way. So some people are able to experience something traumatic and get through it on their own, but others, as you've pointed out, it'll manifest later. So it's not a sign of weakness. It's not that you're not strong enough to handle the thing that has happened. We just react to stress and trauma in different ways.
True, correct. That's very, very correct, Dr. Cindy. That's why I had to first explain what trauma is, because there's trauma, then there's post-traumatic stress disorder, and of late we are also experiencing, or we are seeing also what would be referred as, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, or sometimes secondary, post-traumatic stress disorder. These are sort of a multiple or what you call a series of events, like as you heard on the clip, where I always think of South Africa, you know, people who were involved in the struggle. I mean, if you meet a lot of those guys who really fought for us during apartheid, it's a typical example of the kind of emotional stress we have. Yes, we're very grateful for what they've done. They've done so much for the country. But if you also have to sit down and look at the amount of trauma, really, that they had to go through as prisoners of war, essentially, who had to go to exile and so forth, you would experience or see sometimes some of those emotional outbursts, those symptoms such as, you know, feeling that the world is dangerous, the world is not a safe place. Mm. If you were to look at the older generation versus the new generation and sit down with an old chap, they would even tell you the world is not safe. You know, it's the kind of trauma that they've had to experience over the years. And because it's been repetitive, because it's been done over and over, it sort of becomes sort of a normalized way of life and seeing the world, basically. Yeah.
And we know that in South Africa, the lifetime prevalence for post-traumatic stress disorder in the general population is estimated at 2.3%. And, considering the levels of violence that we're exposed to, it's no surprise that we're sitting at that estimate. If we look at, countries, if you look at Western Europe, their lifetime prevalence of PTSD is around 1%, you know. So it's not that much lower, but it is lower than what we are faced with. And the most effective approach for long-term severe PTSD is talking therapy, like seeing a clinical psychologist. And that's not always easy for people. It's either, access is a problem, or you yourself don't feel it's necessary to talk to someone. So what would you say, Faith, is the best way to encourage people to go and speak to someone?
Sure. I mean, honestly, because quite a lot of these symptoms have been somewhat normalized, you know. I'll make a very simple example. How many of us in our families we know that this child has been repeatedly raped by umalume, the uncle? you know, but we keep it under the wraps. As an example, and the child would over time, for instance, you know, experience some of these sort of symptoms. But because of family knowing and keeping issues sort of sacrosanct and within the family, it, to some extent, it's things that are kept under wraps. And obviously, because of those kind of beliefs and understandings and so forth, and that no, let's sit down and talk about it. It's not just children who are being exposed to abuse. It's also relationships, women and men who are in domestic violence situations, where repeatedly, you know, this person goes back home and says, "Look, I'm abused," but go back, you're married, you can't come back home. Those kind of things are a sign of how somehow this has been sort of normalized to a large extent, that, you know, it's also part of the societal values of, no, you must stay in the house, or we keep issues within the family. So it makes it difficult, honestly, for people to seek help. But when that situation happens and people are becoming more and more liberated and educated and, you know, and getting informed about these things, even if it's talking to, maybe if it's a school child, the teacher, telling a teacher about it, who might maybe even call the nearest social worker because they are more accessible. Mm-hmm. I mean, in many communities where relatively there's this poor background, it's difficult to even access a psychologist, let alone a social worker. So speaking at least to the nearest official, you know, whom you might trust, and also taking advantage of other telephonic lines that are available, like we've got SADC, the South African Depression Anxiety Group. There's also a national line that government has provided for counseling. 24 hours is counselors available 24 hours. So we can, you know, obviously share some of these numbers perhaps at the end of the show, but people know that they can speak out, and there are resources available to start talking about things that are perpetually putting them in traumatic and repeated traumatic situations.
And in your experience, Faith Munyameni, how difficult is it for patients to speak about what they've gone through? You know, how many sessions does it take for a person to come out with what has happened? What's your experience?
Sure. Look, it depends on the approach of the therapist. I apply a solution-focused approach, so that's more short-term. It's a short-term approach. I've mostly had to apply it with, victims of trauma. You know, trauma, and to some extent, post-traumatic incidences, I've had to deal with that. But you find that with cases where it's more a long-term requirement, you'd be looking at about 10-plus sessions, whereas I am more specialized in about 3, 4, 5 sessions, because I'm more solution-focused, and the kind of approach I use is more vigorous in a very short space of time. And you find that it does work to a large extent to also the clients that I would have. However, with cases of post-traumatic stress disorder, or the complexities also of repeated trauma, we would normally encourage not just, you know, psychotherapy, but also treatment, depending on the severity of the case, treatment in terms of medication. So you could go to either a psychologist, a clinical psychologist, who could obviously, provide the treatment, or also a psychiatrist who could also recommend, you know, the dosage and so forth. But obviously those are some, short-term interventions that could be suggested, but psychotherapy being a long-term approach. So you have people who do it depending on the approach of the therapist, short-term, and you have those also who prefer the long-term psychotherapy approach, but it obviously depends on the severity of the trauma. And I must emphasize the severity of the trauma,
Okay, so you're listening to Sidebar Cindy with me. I'm Dr. Cindy C. Fansale, and this evening we're speaking about a serious condition, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and I'm chatting to Faith Munyameni, a social worker from Imani Psychosocial Solutions. And we're taking your calls on 086-000-959. The hashtags on social media are Sidebar Cindy, and the other hashtag is Kaya FM Talk. And we want to make sure that by the end of the show, you can recognize if you're suffering from PTSD and get the necessary help that you need to get you through it. And so, Faith, how common is PTSD in children? Do you see children in your practice at all?
Yes, definitely. In fact, I love children. I love seeing children, and unfortunately, we do. And not because children are abused in most cases by even strangers. Sadly, in most cases that I've seen in my experience, and I mean every therapist has their own experience, in most often children are actually abused by their own family members, people that they would have trusted. Remember, you're talking about somebody who's vulnerable, somebody who is trusting, easily trusting and gullible. And sort of this repeated behavior that you find that children are exposed to, for instance, it could even be indirect, like domestic violence, where a child is repeatedly seeing domestic violence in the home environment, or a child is being sexually abused by a loved one or, you know, some relative in the family. You know, childhood neglect, that children who are sometimes neglected by their own parents, that has an effect on a lot of children. So there are many cases where children are left to the demise of their own trusted family members, their own parents and loved ones. Unfortunately, I do experience a lot of that, and it is quite prevalent. But like I said, there's also the belief of keeping issues sacrosanct and keeping them within the family. Sometimes I experience children who are, you know, pastors' children, and I'm sorry to say this, but I've been seeing that sort of being on the rise, because there is this view of, don't tell, you know, you do it for the family, let's keep it within. Or children from perhaps relatively rich or well-known family members, maybe the father is the CEO of whichever company, or the mother is not. Very true. So these are some of the dilemmas that children face. And because they remain vulnerable, even for them to get help, for them to get counseling, becomes a challenge, because it still depends on those loved ones who would, in most cases, then be perpetually continuing the trauma.
But something always shows, Faith. Yeah, I think, you know, what people need to understand about children is that even if they don't speak out, they'll act out in some way. You'll see a difference in the behavior of the child, and that'll alert you to the fact that something is wrong.
Correct. Very true. And that's why I did initially say that, you know, the teachers also need to be involved. The community members need to be involved. You know, because things like abuse and trauma to children, I think that obviously children would sort of express them through play or through behavior, also to become teenagers and so forth. These are things that I believe it's not just the responsibility of the therapist to pick up when they come for counseling, if they ever do, but also the community is equally responsible. Then the nanny or the caregiver, the secondary caregiver who might be assisting in the family when they pick up this, they also have a responsibility. But again, Dr. Cindy, like I'm saying, because of the you know, the belief that we keep issues within the family, a lot of people really remain or they suffer, in fact, because of, you know, trying to protect the family or what would be in the interest of the Kumalo name, or the, you know, our mom being this person in community, or our father being the pastor and so forth.
Okay, but after the break, we'll speak about PTSD in adults. But for now, just before we go for the break, what would therapy entail for a child that has now been recognized as suffering from PTSD? Post-traumatic stress disorder, yes.
Yes. Look, it depends on obviously the age group of the child, yeah? You know, play therapy is often what would be, you know, applied in therapy. So, for example, some children would be easily expressive in writing. So you find the child would maybe draw his family, you know, his family or her family, or would draw people in his life. I mean, different therapists would use different approaches to sort of elicit the kind of information that might be required. Some children would rather, you know, talk about it, but in a space where maybe it's through play. So the therapist would use things like, not drawing, but you'd use things like items such as dolls and toys, you know, just to elicit that play environment. And depending, like I said, on the age of the children, for example, children are about 9, 10, those are more free to talk, and I find them open in most cases as well. Even now, I just came from my practice, I just saw three children this afternoon. So it just depends on the kind of approach that works for the child. I'm not very rigid in my practice, and most therapists are also like that. They try different approaches to see what could work. But play therapy, most likely for younger children, and the older they become, obviously, it's a bit easier to actually have that sort of talk therapy with them as well.
Okay. Well, after the break, we'll focus on PTSD in adults. And I think the basic example we can use, especially in our context, is hijacking. And then, you know, we can use that as an example and work through that so that people can recognize the symptoms of PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. And this evening, I'm chatting to Faith Mnyameni, a social worker from Imani Psychosocial Solutions. And we're talking about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And just after this clip from Lindokuhle Nkosi, we'll be going into more detail about the symptoms, the signs and symptoms of PTSD, using hijacking as an example. But before that, let's listen to this clip from Lindokuhle Nkosi.
I'm losing a lot of people because I'm realizing that our friendships weren't based on like a mutual compassion. We had fun together, or we drank together, or I was the impulsive friend who'd be like, oh, let's just drive to Durban immediately now. You know what I mean? People are sad. They miss that Lindokuhle. She's gone. I'm just like, so there's a lot of people who miss that, and a lot of people who, the boundaries that I'm putting up now, it's sudden for them. They're not going to therapy with me. They're not learning or discovering the things that I'm discovering about myself. So in the way that I have to learn myself, they have to learn me. And sometimes the me that they're discovering is not somebody that they like.
Sidebar with Cindy on the home of the Afropolitan.
Kaya FM 95.9, home of the Afropolitan. Sidebar Cindy with me, Dr. Cindy Siwe Fansale. And that clip was Lindokuhle Nkosi. She was a victim of a series of violent crimes, and she found herself physically fighting to save her life. And she suffered from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, a year later. So you can listen to the rest of that clip on In Therapy from the Kaya FM website. You go to kayafm.co.za, click on podcasts, and click on In Therapy, and listen to Lindokuhle speaking to Unga Bagazi. But coming back to the show, I'm chatting to Faith Mnyameni, a social worker from Imani Psychosocial Solutions, and we're speaking about you know, PTSD. And I've asked Faith to talk us through the symptoms of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, using hijacking as an example. Mm-hmm. So Faith, I think yeah, it's important for the listeners to know, you know, what the symptoms of PTSD are. So you've been hijacked. So it's a Thursday evening. You're hijacked outside your home or somewhere in Johannesburg. What then happens after that?
Sure. Look, and like I said earlier, that for me to explain post-traumatic distress, I mean, stress disorder, I would have to explain what trauma is initially.
Yes.
And typically, because I'll take you through the process, obviously I get hijacked today, or I've been held at gunpoint, or the car is taken, or whether, you know, they're driving with me, whatever the incident is. Typically would experience what you call typical trauma symptoms. They can be both physical and emotional. And I get this a lot from clients, obviously, coming in a few days after the trauma incident, such as a hijacking and a rape, etc. And emotionally, you'd find the client experiencing shock, denial, disbelief, anger, being irritable. Mood swings are very, very common. Guilt, self-blame, and fear, sadness, hopelessness, confusion, lack of concentration. You know, flashbacks also quite common. Withdrawing from people also, you'd find that it happens quite often. And feeling disconnected from the world in general. Mm-hmm. And it's important for family members and friends to be supportive of someone going through trauma. You know, and not just take it as she's moody or she's going through or she's exaggerating, as an example, he's exaggerating, because these are normal symptoms post a traumatic event. Mm-hmm. And physically, some experience insomnia, really struggling to sleep, or having nightmares, you know, or repeated nightmares sometimes that elicit fear and anxiety. And often you'd find that the heart races quite fast when you're going through trauma. Aches and pains, a lot of people complain about that. They look like, I don't know what's happening, but my body's so painful. Mm. And it's not like they beat me or anything, but it's just so painful. So it's very common fatigue, difficulty concentrating, especially if you go back to work or school, edginess and agitation, muscle tension, etc. So these are normal. These are normal symptoms of trauma. And we expect them to happen, in fact, within the first 7 days to about 2 weeks in a typical trauma situation. However, someone who experiences post-traumatic stress disorder would have to experience these symptoms often after the normal range, which is about 7 days to 2 weeks. You know, a few weeks after the trauma, that's when you find the person now starting to have these symptoms of stress disorder. And often they are now even more overwhelming or somewhat exaggerated, if I can put it like that. So the nightmares are so intense. as an example. The shock is just too much. Flashbacks, it's as if the person is reliving the exact incidents again, that hijack again. Shaking, you know, the person would start to shake even as they narrate the story to you, sitting in that therapy session, for example. Some would even sweat, really, like I said, the physical symptoms. Mm. So with someone with post-traumatic stress disorder, the symptoms become, you know, exaggerated. They become too much, and the feelings that the world is dangerous, very, very common. They don't trust anything, and that's why I had one of the on the clip, one of the listeners mentioning that she eventually was diagnosed with general anxiety disorder. It's very common, obviously, because now the general view of the world begins to change. As to a loss of trust, even of loved ones, or even you know, of people that you used to trust as well, even though they didn't attack you or they were not the ones to do that on you. Avoiding situations, also very, very common. You find the person not wanting to go out anymore,
not wanting to drive or drive in that area.
Yes. Not wanting to stop at the robots, or would rather not be at the, some would even, you know, avoid driving at certain times. For example, say it happened in the morning, they'd avoid that time, or it happened in the evening, they'd avoid driving at those times. And like I'm saying, some would even go to the extent of literally having those physical symptoms, even nausea, and literally vomiting in as they narrate the story, difficult sleeping, like I've said, and some would not even want to hear even a loud voice. So the sound of children playing outside could literally be irritating for somebody with post-traumatic stress disorder. And how do you see the symptoms? It's when they happen even post the incident, 7 days post, or about 7 to 2 weeks post the incident, and it's heightened, it feels real for the person, and it stays, it occurs actually for a longer period than expected. So these are commonly the symptoms.
So you're listening to Sidebar Cindy with me, Dr. Cindy Seyfansel, and I'm talking to Faith Mnyameni, a private social worker, about post-traumatic stress disorder. And the other thing as well to point out, Faith, is that when someone has gone through something traumatic and they start manifesting symptoms of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, it's important, you know, to take whatever they say to you seriously. I think a lot of us, you know, oh no, don't worry about it, you'll be fine, hang in there, you know, keep praying, or you know, just stop thinking about it. We can't afford to do that.
Very true. It's actually said that our society sort of does not take issues of the emotions and mental illness quite seriously. We often are concerned about, you know, I've got a headache, you know, I've got a stomach ache. If someone can physically show you where the pain is, often that's where we are understanding. And sometimes I see that also with employees who say, well, my employer doesn't seem to even get the fact that I'm having shortness of breath. You know, it's one of the listeners has also mentioned example of panic attacks, because often these are not symptoms that one could say this is a headache or easily diagnosed even, because some doctors would pick it up and some wouldn't. You know, sometimes you'd have to really refer the client with what you pick up to the GP so that the GP can also obviously administer accordingly. But sadly, it's also because of the education that we don't have much information on what to do when someone is experiencing anxiety, because post-traumatic stress disorder is a form of anxiety disorder, because it's the repeated thoughts and experiences of horrible events playing over and over and
in
over again
mind,
in the mind, of the the particular individual, the particular victim. So it's true, I agree with you, limited information, and so some people would rather suffer inside. You hear a lot of people coming to my session saying, I thought I was strong. I don't know where that comes from. I think maybe it's how we are raised, that we should be strong. I don't know, but there's no such thing as being strong. We all have the emotional capacity to experience fear, to cry. I even say, even Jesus himself wept. You know what I mean? We don't have to hide how we feel about certain situations, and be open about it and seek help. That's why there are professions like psychologists, social workers, therapists, psychiatrists and so forth.
Yes. And I know that after certain traumatic incidents, the police services will sometimes offer the services of a counselor, you know, whether it's for yourself or your family. And I encourage people to take up those services. And I think through that session, you can then determine if you're going to need further therapy after that.
Mm-hmm. Very true. It's actually quite sad. I think I've not so far had a great experience with victims who've had to go through, obviously, reporting. There are obviously some incidences where, you know, subs official will take really such cases seriously. But I'd also suppose because of how such cases are not probably taken as a priority, you know, that you come in, you're crying, are you fine? Did they beat you? No, they didn't beat me. Did they harm you? No. Okay, then you're fine. Then they prioritize someone who's been killed, as an example. So sometimes you find people really feeling despondent after having to report a case. That's why you find some cases being opened and then eventually they would, you know, and not follow through the case, as an example. I do, and I still do hope that we can improve our system in that regard. There are great, you know, staff officials who do their job quite great, but I think there is always room for improvement in that regard, because I always say I think that's what determines whether the victim is likely to proceed with the case.
And recover.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're taking your calls on 086-000-959. I'm chatting to Faith Mnyameni, a private social worker, and we're speaking about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, a very serious condition that, you know, you can get help, whether it's psychotherapy, and, you know, if necessary, you might need medication from a psychiatrist or even a hospital admission just to help you get through, you know, the trauma of what you've experienced. And what Faith has been pointing out is that the PTSD, you know, manifests 7 days or beyond the trauma that you've experienced. And for some people, it might be avoidance of a situation that reminds them of what they went through. And in this case, we're using hijacking as an example. So you might start avoiding that road that the hijacking happened. You might not want to drive at all. You know, you might start shaking each time you get close to your car. You might be worried about people crossing the road, you know, feeling as if they're coming towards you and so on. Those are all signs of PTSD, and you need to get help for you to get through them and become, you know, functional again, because it can be debilitating and it can affect your day-to-day living. So taking calls on 086-000-959. You can SMS on 36959. And the hashtags on social media, Sidebar Cindy, and the other hashtag is Kaya FM Talk. So, Faith, when you need to refer someone for medication, you'll refer them to a general practitioner, a general doctor, who can then, you know, refer to a psychiatrist.
Look, it's all case specific. It all depends, obviously, on what you would have assessed. There are some cases that you could pick up that it's quite a mild traumatic incident, and then you'd monitor, obviously, because you'd have follow-up sessions. I would sometimes then say to the client, look, you've got options. You can either obviously consider looking at medication as an option also to subsidize counseling, or because these symptoms are typically normal. You know, like I said, in the first few weeks, very normal to experience those symptoms. And they normally or naturally subside on their own. They subside. Sometimes people would experience a challenge with sleeping and anxiety. That's when I'll say, let's monitor it and see maybe in 7 days' time how it is. And in most cases, with the normal cases of trauma, the client will come back and say, look, I'm okay now. Look, they've subsided. It's not as intense as it was. But the difference with post-traumatic stress disorder is that what happened, the incident itself feels so vivid. It feels so live, even weeks after it has happened. And so those are severe cases, obviously. And because of that, you know, even after 2 weeks or after 2 months, it feels like it happened just now. Like I'm saying, those sweats, those have nausea, and all those things are indicative of the level at which the person might either then need to be straight up referred to a psychiatrist. In some cases, or in most cases, rather, it finds that the person already has an existing condition of anxiety, and he's already, you know, has a psychiatrist. So it's a matter of just, you know, connecting with the psychiatrist and getting themselves help. But for some, it's actually the first time they have to go through this, and they might need to go through the GP and then get the referral also to the psychiatrist.
Okay.
And I mean, with private, that's obviously with private facilities, but we also are aware that the bulk majority of our South Africans are rather unemployed or unable to afford such services. These are also available in public hospitals. You know, you can just go to a public hospital and, you know, speak to obviously the officials and express obviously what the condition is. In some cases, they'll put you into psychiatric ward depending on the severity of the case. But again, it depends on the resources of that particular hospital. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so taking calls on 086-000-959. We have Untlantla calling us from Johannesburg. Hi, Untlantla, welcome to the show.
Hi, doctor. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Hi, to your guest as well. My case is kind of very, I'm not too sure how to explain it. I grew up in a very domestic violent home. Okay, I'm approaching my 40s right now, and it's only starting to show like in a couple of years ago. I'm very angry. Very angry at my mom for staying in an abusive relationship. And I approached both my parents, and they kind of apologized, and they tried to, you know, work me through it, but I can't get over it. And I think from their side, it's like, you're over it, so you must also be okay. And I'm not coping very well. My relationship is not working very much because I'm very angry all the time. I'm fighting. I'm just snapping. And I think in the last 6 months or so, I've actually literally withdrawn from everything that I used to do. And I don't know how to deal with it. I've gone to a psychologist, but I don't think she's helping much because all I do is just speak. And I think at the end of every session that we have, it's like I think I'm okay, but then I come back and I really go into a deep depression. I don't know how, what to do. I just need help.
Okay. Faith, Untlantla's situation is quite a difficult one because she is in therapy, she is getting help, but she's not moving past what happened to her in her childhood.
Sure, yeah. Look, like I said, each case is different. If you look at what domestic violence does, is it's indicative of what we call complex post-traumatic stress disorder, because this child has been perpetually exposed to the abuse in the house. Mm-hmm. To the parents, it could have been a situation where after 2-3 years or whatever, they've forgiven each other and they've moved on from it. But often, like you mentioned earlier, the impact of such things on children is that it's quite daunting. And why is it quite daunting, most especially for children, is because the primary years are the most gullible. It's like a sponge. You know, that's when the most of information has actually been attained. And the later years, it's just an addition, to, you know, relatively, because about 80% of child development happens by the time the child turns 3 years. So if you can really look at what is happening now to our listener is the effect of obviously the domestic abuse and problems that are very common with children in that environment is problems with relationships. Relationship issues are very common because the snapping, the anger often is typical of what the child could have experienced in the earlier years. She probably has a negative view now about the world. Even if the parents, after a few years, became pastors, for example, in our world or in her husband's world, he would be marrying a pastor's daughter and the husband would be expecting the daughter to behave as such. Mm. But what we're forgetting is the foundation. This child's foundation was exposed to perpetual violence.
Yeah.
And that has played a significant role. So I wouldn't just really recommend just counseling. And maybe if it means sometimes looking at that approach, I'm one person who's also open to my clients. They look, you can also consider seeing a different therapist. Yeah. I'm that open.
Getting a second opinion, yeah.
Exactly, getting a different opinion. And sometimes really, Dr. Cindy, I might not be, my approach might not really work for this particular client.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I'm more short-term based, I'm more, you know, problem solution focused, and often it works for the kind of people that approach me, but you might find others require a more long-term approach. And I think that's what the caller needs to understand. What she has gone through requires long-term therapy.
Okay.
Because the effects of domestic abuse are actually quite daunting. So I would not even be surprised that actually even therapy could be you know, working, like she's saying, on some days it's okay, but because it's a long-term psychotherapy that is required, it might mean she needs to be patient with the process, forgive herself, forgive her parents for it. Sometimes it requires just sit down and really say, I forgive you guys.
We're chatting about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the symptoms of it and what you can do to get help. I'm chatting to Faith Mnyameni, a private social worker from Imani Psychosocial Solutions. We're taking your calls on 086-000-959. You can SMS us on 36959. Hashtags on social media, sidebar Cindy and Kai FM Talk. So coming back to you, Faith Mnyameni, one of the things that I'm always concerned about is that a lot of people are reluctant to be admitted into hospital with a mental, health condition. And I know that for some patients, therapy will happen, but that's not enough. You might need to be admitted and be under care for 21 days under the care of a psychiatrist and an in-house psychologist. What prevents people from wanting to go to a mental wellness center, in your experience?
Sure. Again, it goes back to, you know, how we've been conditioned. It's how we've been raised to believe that mental illness is a sign of weakness. So, you know, you must solve your own problems. You must step out of it, you know, get out of it. And you're seeing this a lot happening in our society. The belief that everything, or most things in life, are just the one, you know, one step solution. Sometimes you need to take 5 steps really to get to the solution, and that's why mental health institutions are also there to sort of assist and alleviate some of these conditions that people go through. So it goes back to psychoeducation, that we need to re-educate ourselves as a society that there's really nothing wrong when you're overwhelmed with life situations. There's nothing wrong after giving birth as a woman and you can't cope with having the baby and you need extra assistance or you need to be admitted. There's nothing wrong as a father when you feel overwhelmed with responsibilities. As a child, a teenager, going through exams and it's too much, there's nothing wrong with talking about it and seeking therapy. So it's really conscientizing our community, again, about how important it is to realize when your brain is actually in a state where it's overwhelmed. Whether it's through anxiety, depression, PTSD as a form of anxiety in itself, or based on an incident like hijacking, rape, it's okay. It's okay to talk about it. It's okay to seek medical assistance if it's that extreme and you need to be admitted into a mental health institution. So slowly but surely, our society is moving towards, acknowledging that. But I think we need to do more and more and more awareness as well.
And you know, Faith Mnyameni, the one thing that I come across a lot in my line of work is that where a family has swept an issue under the carpet, then you're older, then you're angry and you're lashing out.
True.
True. Then there's a confrontation and they take everything lightly. Mm-hmm. Working through that is probably the hardest thing, especially if it's your mom, if it's a primary caregiver, a person that you trusted. So how do you recommend that people confront primary caregivers, be whether it's ugogo or umama or ubaba, who you felt could have defended you, but they chose not to, and they protected the person that was violating you?
Okay, it's a very difficult thing to do, and I do acknowledge it, and I think it's what the previous caller also is sort of dealing with to a large extent. I do, in my short-term therapy, I encourage a lot of managing expectations. One of the treatment solutions I advocate for is manage your expectations, essentially, because that's all you have control over. It's all you have control over. You can approach your mother and say, Ma, I don't like the way you raised me. You were absent, or I saw the abuse and I'm confronting the situation. You guys think I had a great life because you took me to private school, but I actually saw the abuse. I saw daddy doing this to you or mommy doing that to you. Confront the situation, if you can and you feel you are ready for it, with no expectations. As painful as that can be, but you need to be ready to actually deal with whatever reaction you might get. Mm. It might not be what you expect, because often I hear people saying, but mama, I mean, she should have hugged me. She should have protected me. She just said sorry. And because mommy is not going to say sorry, at that confrontation. Mm-hmm. Because they are not going to say, I shouldn't have at that confrontation. They might even defend themselves, correct? Like saying, so put it on the carpet and say, no, you are the one who didn't see right, or whatever the issue might be. Trying to approach them with no expectations, I have found to actually give a lot of victims and clients a lot of power back, because you are still in control of that conversation. You are still in control of that confrontation, that you're saying your mind out. So be goal-orientated. Have an intention when you go and approach the situation. My intention is, as of faith, I'm going to approach my, I don't know, mother, you know, for the fact that she allowed this man who was my stepfather to raid me at night. And she heard me cry, and she kept quiet because she was, you know, surviving, you know, through the income, as an example. My intention of approaching my mother is not necessarily to get a story or reaction from her. My intention is, I want to get this out of my border. I want to let it out of my system, and I want to forgive her. That's it. I'm going there with a goal in mind, with an intention in mind, no expectation whatsoever. So a lot of people, and this is general even in other relationships, a lot of people do things with expectations, and often two things, like the expectations creates disappointment and a sense of entitlement. You feel entitled to Isoriga mam. You feel entitled to Isoriga koko, and you might not get it. And if you don't accept what is within your locus of control and accept that people will always react in the manner that they however wish, you will always be disappointed. And chances are, even if you go through therapy, you go through treatment, you might still not get the healing that you want, because you still have expectations. But these are outside your control. You have people who are still grieving today and angry at someone who has died long time ago. They're still harboring that anger.
It paralyzes you. It's like you're imprisoned in this emotion. Correct.
Very, very true. Because remember, forgiveness actually does not liberate the doer. It liberates the victim, the one who actually was abused or was a victim. So it's very important to realize the power of forgiveness. I always advocate for self-forgiveness first. Every day, we need to forgive ourselves. Every single day. I even make an analogy and say, Jesus forgave us a long time ago, but we're still not forgiving ourselves. So every single day, we need to perpetually forgive ourselves. It's an intention, it's a deliberation that we need to come to realize. It's not the fact that this man abused you. It's the fact that you stayed in that marriage and this man, allowing this man to abuse you, because you have 50% to say yes or no, continuing that relationship. So if you forgive yourself, you're also forgiving yourself for your part in it. But also common with post-traumatic stress disorder and the behaviors is that a lot of people then get fixated into or focus on the abuser.
Yeah.
So umuntu focus on the abuser. You're waiting for the abuser to come and say sorry. You're waiting for the abuser to say, I didn't mean it. That day might not come.
Okay.
And so what that means is you'll be in prison for a long time in your life.
Okay, so we have enough time for one more caller. We have Ularato on the line. Hi, Lerato. Welcome to Side Part Cindy.
Good day. Interesting topic. I just want to say that this is very, I think maybe, this is very, I'm talking because I'm actually heartbroken, but at the same time, I'm excited at the fact that I went through a recovery process.
Mm.
And I went through a very depressing episode, which led to me being diagnosed with cataplexy. So I went through a difficult divorce, and over the years, I didn't know that I was carrying a lot of hurt that was now leading me to actually having my emotions not to sort of communicate with my mind. And as a result, every time I became excited or angry, I was in collapse, and then I can hear everything, I can see, I can hear everything, I can feel everything, but I can't move. And until I went to I went through all of those psychological, you know, I got help and spiritual and whatever, until I took a decision that it starts with me, and I need to accept the what happened in the past and move forward and just ask God for complete healing of my mind and my body and my soul. So, what you're talking about, a post-traumatic stress, I was not aware that I was going through that.
Yeah.
I was really not aware that I was hurting that much. I knew that divorce is not nice, but years later, 3-4 years later, I then started having this condition. But as I'm speaking to you now, I can say I'm fully healed, because it started with me taking control and saying, I can't do this anymore, you know.
Well, thank you so much, Lerato, and we're happy for your healing, and thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you very much.
So, Faith, in closing, if people need help, if they've been listening and they feel that they may be suffering from PTSD, where can we get hold of you? Where can they get hold of you?
So my offices are in Midrand at Erand Gardens, at the Willows Office Park in Erand Gardens. My line is 011-655-7229. They can also go to MedPages and search for Faith Nyameni on MedPages. We are working on our website. Since the last time I was there, I'm working also on being in the media space. So I'm busy with my developer. Our website should be up at imanips.co.za. That should be done up and done in a month's time. So by end of September, you can actually access our company at imanips online. Alternatively, just Google Faith Nyameni Private Practice. You'll be able to get my details also there.
Okay, great stuff. It's always great having you on the show, and thank you so much for your insights.
Sidebar with Cindy.
Every Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.